This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 313 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a summary of some of the latest developments in Gaza and the West Bank, and we'll also share some reportage highlights from the Electronic Intifada's contributors there. Over the last week, Israel has attacked areas across the Gaza Strip, including Deir Abala, Nuseirat, Burej, and Maghazi refugee camp in the central area, as well as Khan Yunus in the south and Gaza City in the north. Let's start there. In the El Daraj neighborhood of Gaza City, as crowds of displaced people sheltering in the Tabayin school gathered for dawn prayer on Saturday morning, Israeli airstrikes bombed the school, killing more than 100 people. Our senior editor Maureen Claire Murphy reported that just days before the massacre, Israel issued evacuation orders in northern Gaza, instructing residents of areas including Beit Lahia and Beit Hanun to go to shelters in central Gaza City, the area that was targeted on Saturday. Many of those killed were shredded or burned beyond recognition, as documented in horrific video and photos of the carnage, images that we won't show here. Others who were present at the school remained unaccounted for after the massacre, Maureen writes. The civil defense spokesperson said that some 350 families were sheltering at Tabayin School when it was hit in strikes on the upper floor, used to house displaced people, and the lower floor that served as a mosque, adding that Israel had attacked 13 shelters since the beginning of August. Al Jazeera's Anas Al-Sharif filed this report for the agency on Sunday.
We're inside the Al Tabin school prayer room in the aftermath of the massacre perpetrated by the Israeli forces against innocent civilians who were simply offering dawn prayers. More than 100 Palestinians were killed and dozens more were injured. The school, where hundreds of Palestinians were sheltering, was targeted and hit by a number of missiles fired from Israeli warplanes. The extent of the damage is clearly visible. Blood splatters on the floor, pieces of cloth, even body parts, and people are still looking for the remains of their relatives.
I came running to search for my family. My father was killed and my brother's legs were both severed. I am proud my father and brother died as martyrs.
I am now on the upper level of the mosque. It was also targeted by an Israeli warplane. You can see the hole where the missile penetrated the roof on the lower level. Dozens of women were praying on the lower level and were killed and injured. These are some of the parts of the missiles fired from Israeli jets on innocent displaced civilians sheltering here in the school. Despite the danger, many families have returned to the school and the fact they have nowhere else to go.
My son is suffering from lung fibrosis. We hardly survived the attack. I carried my son and ran for our lives. By the time I got down, I saw hundreds of dead bodies, blown to pieces, even scattered outside the school building, body organs stuck on the walls, horrific scenes, beyond description, beyond reason. We have nowhere to go, so we returned to the school, where the most basic necessities of life are totally absent.
This is the scene at the Al Tabin school where displaced Palestinians were sheltering and the Israeli military committed this massacre.
That was Anas Al-Sharif reporting on Sunday. CNN reported that, quote, at least one U.S.-manufactured precision-guided bomb was used in the strike on the school. Quote, footage of the aftermath filmed by CNN showed parts of an explosive device that Trevor Ball, a former U.S. Army explosive ordnance disposal technician, confirmed were from a GBU-39 small diameter bomb, the American broadcaster added, noting that the munition is manufactured by Boeing. Israel claimed that it killed 19 operatives with Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad during the attack and accused the resistance groups of using the school as a command center, repeating previous attempts to justify strikes on schools, hospitals, and other civilian targets, Maureen Claire Murphy writes. In a statement published on its Telegram channel, she adds, Hamas rejected Israel's claims, saying that no militants were at the Tabaim school and that its fighters are under strict orders to not congregate among civilians so as, quote, to spare them from Zionist targeting. Rami Abdu, director of Euromed Human Rights Monitor, said that some of the supposed Hamas and Islamic Jihad operatives that Israel claimed to have targeted at the school on Saturday had in fact been killed in other locations in previous days. The deadly attack destroying the bodies of dozens of Palestinians also came one day after the U.S. State Department announced that Washington would provide Israel $3.5 billion for additional U.S. weapons and military equipment, Maureen reports. Congress approved $14 billion in additional funding for Israel in April. Read Maureen Claire Murphy's report, U.S. Weapon Used in Gaza City School Massacre That Killed 100, on electronicintifada.net. Al Jazeera's fact-checking unit, Sanad, further explored the details of Israel's attack on Tabaim School. Their investigation determined that the attack was, quote, deliberately timed to cause maximum casualties, with a large number of displaced people deliberately targeted. According to multiple reports and the spokesperson for the Civil Defense Corps in Gaza, bodies were ripped to pieces, making it impossible for grieving families to retrieve the remains of their loved ones. Instead, the doctors at Al-Ahli Baptist Hospital, where the pieces of bodies were taken, quote, started collecting body parts in plastic bags and giving 70 kilograms of remains to the family of a martyr who has gone missing, according to Tarek Hajjaj, Mondo Weiss's correspondent in Gaza. Hassan Ahmad told Hajjaj and Mondo Weiss that he searched extensively for the body of his six-year-old son, Ali, and after hours of searching, he did not find a trace of him. He then went to the Baptist hospital to ask about his son or to find any part of his body so he could identify him and bury him. After a long search that did not yield any results, the doctors at the Baptist hospital gave him a plastic bag containing 18 kilograms of human remains and told him, "This is your son. Go and bury him." Quote, "I don't know if this is my son or not. I don't know what I'm carrying in this bag. They said he's my son, and I don't know anything, and I don't see anything of my son in this bag," Ahmed explained. Meanwhile, Anas Al-Sharif, the Al Jazeera reporter we just showed, said that he emotionally and physically collapsed when he reached the scene and started to work. He posted, quote, "My words stopped, and I lost my strength and ability to express myself and talk when I reached the scene of the massacre. The limbs and blood were around us. The bodies were cut up on top of each other. Tell me what words and phrases can help any journalist describe this horrific picture. When I told you on air that it was an indescribable scene, I was truly helpless in front of this scene. How can we convey to you our extermination? I was tired and in pain from the amount of body parts and blood I saw today." 2 weeks after they assassinated Ibrahim Al-Ghul and Rami Al-Rifi, two Al Jazeera journalists, the Israeli military now appears to be targeting Anas Al-Sharif. An Israeli military spokesperson accused him of lying and of having an affiliation with members of Hamas. Al Jazeera condemned the incitement against their reporter, saying, quote, "We hold the Israeli government fully responsible for Anas's safety and warn that this rhetoric signals an intention to target him, just as they did with Ismail Al-Ghul and Rami Al-Rifi, in a bid to conceal the truth of what is happening in Gaza." Israeli airstrikes in and around Deir al-Balah in central Gaza continued this week. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed reported over the weekend that Israeli missile strikes killed 10 people, mostly women, on Friday. And on Tuesday, Mohammed Abu al-Kumsan, whose wife, a pharmacist, gave birth to twins just 3 days before, went to pick up birth certificates for the newborns. While he was out, Israel bombed the apartment, killing his babies, his wife, and her mother. They had been displaced from northern Gaza and were sheltering in Deir al-Balah. This video of Abu al-Kumsan learning of the murder of his family needs no translation.
No,
The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza stated that the total number of infants who were born and have been killed since October 7th is now up to 115. Meanwhile, as Israel's evacuation orders continue to mass displace Palestinians seeking safety and refuge, including this week in the southern city of Khan Yunis, the United Nations Agency for Palestine Refugees has warned that the search for clean water in Gaza is adding to the displacement misery. Louise Wateridge of UNRWA stated, quote, "These people, they've lost absolutely everything. They don't seem to be carrying much at all. Children were dragging empty water canisters because that's one of the most precious items. Now, anything that you can put water in, it is one of your most precious valuables. They were carried mattresses, jerry cans, and empty water cans, and not much else, because people can only really carry what they can in their hands." The UNRWA communications officer explained that families continue to seek shelter in parts of Deir al-Balah in central Gaza and in western Khan Yunis further south. The United Nations reported this week that, quote, "the cumulative impact of humanitarian aid access constraints is perpetuating a continued cycle of deprivation and distress among affected people." Since August 1st, about a third of aid missions within Gaza were denied access by Israeli authorities, the UN added. The World Food Program said that 21 of its food distribution points have been closed under the evacuation orders since the beginning of the month. Last week, the Norwegian Refugee Council reported that it had been unable to transport aid from crossing points to its warehouses in Gaza for 3 months, with an estimated 488 pallets of aid, for which the group is the consignee, stranded at Kerem Shalom Crossing. This week, we'll highlight two recent features published by our writers in Gaza, focusing on the testimony of Palestinians who were tortured in Israeli detention. On July 29th, in an article titled "Man Caring for Mother with Alzheimer's Sent to Torture Camp," Fida Al-Kedra reported on the experience of three recently released detainees, including Iyad Awad, who was abducted from his home in Jabalia, northern Gaza, where he had remained with his mother, who had Alzheimer's disease. Quote, "I told them that my mother needed someone to take care of her," Iyad said. "A soldier told me that he would bring me back to her." After hours of being away from his mother, Iyad walked a few steps. The Israelis shot him in the side of his body. He was taken to hospital, where he underwent surgery. Following the operation, Iyad was brought to Sde Teiman, a military camp in the Naqab Desert. The conditions there were unsanitary. Quote, "There were more than 30 of us using one bathroom that was only cleaned once a week," he said. "During approximately 70 days of detention, I could not shower, cut my nails, or change my clothes." Despite having been wounded, Iyad did not receive any medical care in the military camp. Apart from paracetamol, he was not given any medicine. When Iyad was eventually released, he learned that his mother had been left to die. "The neighbors found her dead on the bed," he said, after Israeli troops had withdrawn from Jabalia. As they had been unable to make contact with him, other members of Iyad's family had assumed he had been killed. Quote, "They were surprised when I got out of prison that I was alive," he said. And on August 8th, in an article titled 18 Days in Israeli Prison, Shahad Ali reported on the horrific torture her 20-year-old cousin Nayef endured after he was abducted during Israel's invasion of his Gaza City neighborhood in December. Nayef, who had been shot in the foot during the incursion, and other men were taken to a prison in an unknown location. Shahad writes, "When he arrived, he asked to see a doctor due to his foot injury, but they refused. He was beaten repeatedly, and he saw many other people being beaten. The food they provided was meager. Bread, a slice of cucumber, a slice of tomato. Even water was not freely given. He said that when he asked one of the guards for water, they told him to open his mouth. He did so, thinking that the guard would pour water into his mouth, but instead the guard spat into his mouth and forced him to swallow it. The last 3 days in the prison were the worst, he said. The mental and physical torture reached unbearable levels. His whole body ached, and for the first time he wished he were dead. Every inch of his body was covered with cuts and bruises. Finally, after 18 days, he was released. He received treatment for his foot, and luckily the doctors did not have to amputate it. Quote, the memory of my imprisonment will stay with me forever, he said. Read both Fidel Kedra's and Shahad Ali's features on electronicintifada.net. Turning to the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces rampaged through the cities of Ramallah and El Bireh in pre-dawn raids on Tuesday. One Palestinian man, Mu'attaz Sarsour, died after being shot by Israeli soldiers. Others were shot and injured, and a man was run over by an Israeli military vehicle in Amari refugee camp. Israeli forces stormed the areas to locate and demolish the homes of Palestinian prisoners, according to local media and Al Jazeera. At least 20 Palestinians were arrested and detained during the raids, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, including a child and several former prisoners, and soldiers broke into the homes and vandalized them. The Palestinian news agency Wafa reported that Israeli forces raided two residential buildings in the cities of Ramallah and El Bireh and then blew them up. On Monday, Tarek Daoud, an 18-year-old Palestinian youth, was shot and killed by Israeli soldiers in Azoun near Qalqilya. And Wafa news agency reported that Shadi Wissam Shahada, 17 years old, was shot by Israeli forces in the Jerusalem area town of Anata while he was working at his privately owned car wash shop in the area. He died of his wounds later in the day. Local sources said that the occupation snipers inside the Pisgat Ze'ev settlement colony opened fire at the young man for allegedly throwing stones at the occupation soldiers from behind the separation wall. Other raids and arrests were reported in Nablus, Haris, the Arub refugee camp, Salfit, Na'alin, and Talfit over the last several days. This week, Defense for Children International Palestine reported on a violent arrest that happened in June, carried out by Israeli forces against a 7-year-old Palestinian boy in the central occupied West Bank. Baha was on his way to a grocery store to buy sweets with his friends on the first day of Eid in mid-June in the Palestinian village of Al-Mughayr, northeast of Ramallah, when the boys came across Israeli forces carrying out arrests in the village. According to Defense for Children International Palestine, the boys allegedly threw some stones toward the heavily armored Israeli military vehicles, and Israeli soldiers proceeded to fire live ammunition toward them. Baha's friends fled, and Israeli forces began beating Baha and bound his hands behind his back with a plastic zip tie. Israeli forces placed Baha alongside three young Palestinian men in the back of a military vehicle and brought them to Al-Sahel, an area about 700 meters away that Israeli forces declared a closed military zone after October 7th. Quote, the soldiers kept me there under the sun for almost 3 hours, Baha told DCIP. Then a soldier untied me and told me I could go home but should not throw stones at them again. I headed back to the house on foot, and my hands were hurting after being hit by the soldiers. By the time I had arrived home, my finger had swollen and my face had turned yellow because I was really scared and because of walking in the sun the whole time. I have not left the house since the incident because I am scared of the Israeli soldiers and I do not want to get arrested again. Baha, who is 7 years old, told DCIP. Our contributor Faiha Shalash in the occupied West Bank writes that Israel's demolition of Palestinian homes in the West Bank is escalating. Since October 7th, Israel has demolished nearly 400 homes in the West Bank, leading to the displacement of over 2,300 people, about half of them children. Up until August this year alone, Israel has already demolished or forced the demolition of a total of 923 Palestinian-owned structures in the West Bank, leading to the displacement of nearly 2,000 people. For more, read Faiha's feature, Home Demolitions Set to Further Escalate, on electronicintifada.net. Finally, we wanted to bring you some images and videos from journalists and others in Gaza that highlight the resilience, joy, and determination of the Palestinian people. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed posted this photo of his niece Ailul 308 days into the war. Residents of Shujaiya in eastern Gaza City are rebuilding their homes that have been destroyed by 10 months of Israeli bombardments, refusing to relocate to the south. A man tells the one filming in this video that, quote, "We want to live. We are people and we want to live." The man filming him asks if he's from Shujaiya, and the man in the house says, "We are from Shujaiya. We are rebuilding and striving to live again." The one filming then narrates the situation, saying that the man is returning to his home in Shujaiya despite the destruction in the area. A room that can provide some protection is better than a tent in the south, he says. Let's go to that video.
رغم الدمار الكبير الذي حل بالحي إلا أن بعض من المواطنين يعني ما لم يجدوا أمامهم سوى.
And Gaza Sunbirds, the paracycling team, posted this video of one of their members, Abdullah Angar, and his little boy Karam, on a trip to the beach. He says, in the midst of displacement, come with us to see Karam playing in the sea.
اليوم طبعا رحلتنا انا وابني كرم على بحر قطاع غزه قصد النزول تعالوا معنا لنشوف كرم وهو يلعب في
Thanks to Gaza Sunbirds for that video. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.